content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, friends. This is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Kiplinger Personal Finance, also AARP Bulletin, and if time permits at the end of our episode today, we'll continue some readings from the book Money Hacks by Lisa Rowan. Our first article from Kiplinger Personal Finance is an interesting article, Get the Most Out of Your Collectibles. If you're a fan of Antiques Roadshow, you've probably fantasized about discovering that your grandmother's chafing dish is worth more than your car. But just because an item is old and cherished doesn't mean it's valuable. Here's a guide to assessing your collectibles and to selling or donating the stuff you don't want to keep. Let's start with jewelry. If you think your grandmother's engagement ring or your grandfather's pocket watch is valuable, seek out an appraisal so that you can adequately insure it against loss, theft, or damage. If you're interested in selling the item, hire an accredited appraiser who will research and analyze the market, says Lynn Mangumson, one of the few appraisers in the country to hold accreditations with the American Society of Appraisers, the Appraisers Association of America, and the International Society of Appraisers. An accredited researcher will assess comparable sales at auctions, jewelry stores, and jewelry dealers, bringing in a third party to vouch for the item's value in the form of an official appraisal will increase the likelihood you'll receive a fair price when you sell. If you're primarily looking to insure objects you plan to keep, you'll want to get the replacement value, which an appraiser can provide by researching the cost of replacing your item with a new one or a version that's close to the item as possible. If you want to donate jewelry to charity and deduct the donation on your tax return, ask the appraiser to provide the item's fair market value, which is the, quote, price that property would sell for on the open market between a willing buyer and a willing seller, with both having reasonable knowledge of the relevant facts, according to the IRS. You should fact-check an appraisal by reviewing the report and verifying that your appraiser noted any characteristics that could affect the jewelry's value. If you see any errors, let your appraiser know and ask for a correction. Make sure the appraiser takes the jewelry's maker into account, because that's the most important characteristic used to determine its value. Similar to artwork, it's always about the artist, Magnum says. For example, buyers will pay a premium for a gold bracelet from Tiffany & Company as opposed to a gold bracelet from Macy's. The next quality to consider is scarcity. Appraisers will assess the piece's origin to determine how rare it may be. If the piece is from the collection of a historical figure or celebrity, such as Catherine the Great or Elizabeth Taylor, it could carry significant value. Inherent qualities of an object, such as the quality of the metal and stones, will also affect its value. For example, an appraiser will assess the four C's of a diamond: carat weight, color grade, clarity grade, and cut grade. The Gemological Institute of America, which crafted this method, is the standard resource for jewelry appraisals. appraisers typically use characteristics developed by the GIA to determine the value of gems and assess the metals. Finally, a piece of jewelry should never be worth less than the sum of its parts. A buyer can always scrap the gold or silver and sell it to a refinery, or remove the diamonds and sell them to a diamond dealer. You can search for the spot price of precious metals at a website such as Kitco, that's KITCO.com. However, keep in mind that the precious metal in jewelry is typically mixed with other elements for color and or strength, Magnuson says. For example, 14-karat gold jewelry is made up of 58.3% pure gold and 41.7% alloy. Shop around at jewelry stores and dealers to get the best prices. And what about coins? Unlike jewelry, which is often subject to wear from use, coins usually maintain their quality over time once they've been graded and valued, because the grading process typically involves storing them as collector's items. Institutions such as the Professional Coin Grading Service and Numismatic Guarantee Company grade coins on a scale reflective of their condition. These companies will preserve the coin in a plastic case in the process known as slabbing. The cost to have coins slabbed depends on the type of coin and can range from $25 to $300 per coin. If you submit an entire collection for grading, you may be able to get a discount. Coin grading institutions will assess a coin's value based on its rarity. So, for example, a colonial coin, one issued in the British colonies before they became U.S. states, a limited issue coin, or an uncirculated coin in mint condition, may earn a higher grade than a more common coin in the same condition. You get a sense of how rare your coins are through the Professional Coin Grading Service's Price Guide, which lists prices for all types of American and colonial coins. And you can find that site at pcgs.com. The Numismatic Guarantee Company also has a price guide for coins from around the world, and that can be found at ngccoin.com. Once you've determined the value of your coins, there are a number of marketplaces to turn to if you'd like to sell. Coins are a very active marketplace, Magnuson says. You can sell coins to a local dealer or take them to coin shows, such as the American Numismatic Association's National Money Show or the World's Fair of Money, where you can shop your collection to different dealers. As within any other collection, you can offer it for sale online, marketplace such as eBay or Facebook Marketplace. If you choose this route, you'll need to assume the responsibility of photographing, listing, and managing negotiations with potential buyers. If you own a high-value coin or collection, you may want to turn it into an auction house, such as Heritage Auctions, which can be found at ha.com, or Stax Bowers Galleries at stackbowers.com, where you're more likely to find buyers who can afford big-ticket purchases. And do you have any sports memorabilia? Many sports fans have collected jerseys, equipment, stadium seats, trophies, and baseball cards. As is the case with other collectibles, condition will play a key role in valuing your sports memorabilia, along with name recognition if the item is associated with a particular athlete or sporting venue. An autographed item may yield a high value as well, depending on who pinned it. Some items, such as baseball cards, will get the best value at specialized auction houses, says Thomas Ruge, a certified financial planner based in Orlando and owner of a multi-million dollar sports memorabilia collection. Baseball cards, like coins, are graded and slabbed, which makes them easier to value and store than some other types of sports memorabilia. To authenticate your memorabilia, you'll generally need to find someone who specializes in the specific type of item. Look for accreditation, such as professional sports authenticator. Some companies use a photo matching technology to verify that an item belongs to a particular player, team, or era in a given sport. If you have photos of the item being used in a game, that should also help in the authentication process. Art. To get a sense of whether you have a high-value piece of artwork, first determine whether it's a print or an original. If you suspect it's a print, look for an edition number at the bottom of the piece. Some prints are valuable if the image is desirable, the artist is acclaimed, or the edition length is limited. If a print run is small, then its relative rarity enhances that value. It can also be difficult to tell the difference between a limited edition print and a reproduction print, says Peter Held, an art appraiser accredited with the American Society of Appraisers. If you look at the surface closely with a magnifying glass and see a dot matrix pattern, that's a reproduction print. And generally, those are a lot less valued than an original print made by an artist, he says. If you have an original work, consider its origin to determine whether it may be a high-value piece. Look for its origin in receipts or other records from the purchase. If you have trouble reading the artist's signature, try photographing it and using Google Lens, a tool that searches online for images similar to your photo, to help you determine which artist it may be. If you suspect your art is valuable, find an accredited art appraiser with appraisal societies such as the ASA, and that can be located at appraisers.org, the Appraisers Association of America, again at appraisersassociation.org, and the International Society of Appraisers, which can be located at isa-appraisers.org. Once you select an appraiser, you'll probably be asked to identify the artist and provide documents such as photographs, receipts, and records of exhibits or publications that feature the artwork. Then the appraiser will use auction databases to compare the work with recorded sales. If the artist was represented by a gallery, the appraiser may ask the gallery for comparable sales to come up with a range of values for the work. If you want to donate your artwork to a museum, the appraiser will contact the museum curator or registrar, depending on who is handling the donation, to acquire information you'll need for tax purposes. An appraiser will fill in IRS Form 8283 for non-cash charitable gifts for you to use when filing your tax return, so you can deduct the contribution. The cost to appraise a work of art ranges from $500 to thousands of dollars based on the time, type of appraisal needed, and complexity of the market for the property, among other things. In addition to assessing value, some appraisers may point you to the best market for sale, whether it's a gallery, an auction house, or a private dealer, says Held. Market research alone with no appraisal may cost less, he says. And how about that fine china you may have? A complete set of fine china will typically earn you a better price than an incomplete one. But incomplete sets or even single pieces may be worth more than you expect. Many websites sell single pieces of china to buyers who want to replace items that were lost or damaged. If you're looking to sell a single item or an incomplete collection, check out sites such as Classic Replacements at classicreplacements.com and Replacements Limited at replacements.com. Before you accept a selling price, do some research to determine your item's value. As is the case with most collectibles, consider condition, rarity, quality, and maker. Since china is subject to wear and tear, search for cracks, chips, and scrapes. Look for a maker's insignia or a label identifying the material. French porcelain, for example. If the china is from a name brand maker, research how similar sets or pieces have sold recently on secondary marketplaces, such as Facebook Marketplace and eBay. Sometimes certain brands become popular and sell for higher than usual retail prices, Magnin says. For example, Pyrex collections from the mid-20th century that are adorned with kitcheny patterns are very popular now. A 1950s Pyrex collection recently sold on eBay for $1,300. And what about those rare books and archives? If you have a collectible book or document, an appraiser who specializes in rare books, manuscripts, and archives can help you authenticate its value. But the fee to have an appraiser research the value and provide a report could run as high as $2,500. So before you hire one, try to get a sense of what your item or collection is worth by assessing it for any valuable characteristics. If you determine that an appraisal is worthwhile, seek out an appraiser who follows the uniform standards of professional appraisal practice, says John Henley, a rare books, archives, and manuscripts appraiser with the ASA. Generally speaking, condition is the most important consideration when valuing these items, Henley says. There are only a few exceptions to this. For example, if you have a Gutenberg Bible that's in rough condition, you're still going to get a lot of money for it, he says, because even a damaged Gutenberg is very valuable. Otherwise, if the book's boards, the rigid flat sheets that form the central component of the book cover, are detached, the pages are soiled, or it has fire damage, its value will be significantly diminished. Recognition will also influence a book's value. If there was significant media buzz about the book at one time, that could drive up the value. Scarcity will do the same, but not always, Henley says. Sometimes an archive or manuscript can have what's called discovery value, meaning there's something within it that affects our understanding of history. Similarly, a compelling social history can enhance a collectible's association value. For example, an appraiser might ask whether a book was the author's working copy or was given to a close associate or editor. If it was part of a famous collection, that could also increase its association value. For documents, content is king, Henley says. If you own a document or archive with objectively interesting or intriguing content, that will increase its value. Content also matters when it comes to documents signed by someone with name recognition. For example, a letter signed by F. Scott Fitzgerald will be more valuable than a hotel registry signed by Fitzgerald, Henley says. And lastly, protecting your collectibles. Whether you're starting a collection or preserving one, your high-value items may not be included in a standard homeowner's or renter's insurance policy. You can get a rider on your policy to cover certain items, but riders won't always cover the entire replacement value of an item. Another option is a separate insurance policy designed for collectibles. You'll typically need an appraisal to verify the value of items you want to insure, and annual premiums will be based on a percentage of their value, typically about 1%. To shield against damage and loss, store your collectibles safely. Artwork should be protected from exposure to light and dust. Delicate items, such as fine china, may be better suited for display than use. If you're buying an item for your collection, ask the seller how they recommend preserving your collectible. Cool temperatures and moderate humidity will help preserve your item's condition. Attics and basements are not typically ideal locations for storing your valuables. And from AARP Bulletin, fighting unfair charges. Ways to win credit card disputes. One of the best reasons for making purchases with a credit card is that you get built-in safety net. If something goes wrong, you can dispute the bill and get the transaction reversed. One might ask for such a cancellation, such as a chargeback to correct or double charge or other billing error. Or maybe that product you bought online never showed up or turned out to be counterfeit. Maybe you never made a purchase in the first place. Subscriptions are one of the fastest growing chargeback categories, according to Rajante Iyer, Senior Vice President, Cyber and Intelligence at MasterCard. Consumers have so many of them, she says, that they may forget they signed up, or they may have trouble canceling them. Chargebacks, which are on the rise, can be tricky because an increasing number of consumers are filing fraudulent disputes. Many merchants are trying to put the brakes on these cancellations, so it's important to play by the rules or you might get turned down. What's worse, even if you win, you could end up losing. Consumers who have successfully disputed charges have in some cases been banned by Uber and other merchants, according to the Elliott Report Consumer Advocacy site. Companies may limit chargebacks to one per customer and maintain, quote, merchant deny lists that are shared with other sellers, according to Signify, one of the many firms that have popped up to help companies fight chargebacks. Here are six do's and don'ts to win credit card disputes and minimize hassles. Don't delay. You have just 60 days from the time you receive your credit card bill to dispute a charge. So keep close tabs on your statements and check carefully for suspicious transactions. Signing up for purchase alerts can also help. And don't leapfrog the merchant. Unless it's outright fraud, card issuers expect you to try to work with the seller first. Vendors have an incentive to resolve disputes by offering, say, a refund, exchange, or repair, since chargebacks can be expensive. Dealing directly with merchants is often the quickest way to get satisfaction and can help you avoid trouble later on. Merchants who lose chargeback disputes may file lawsuits or use collection agencies to recover funds, according to the Elliott Report. And do be patient. It might take up to 90 days or two billing cycles to get the problem resolved. In the meantime, you have the right to withhold payment of the disputed amount, according to the Federal Trade Commission. And do double check. If you don't recognize a charge, take the time to review the details. Check your calendar to see where you were that day. Call the toll-free number that may be listed with the charge, or do an internet search for the named merchant. That's how my editor learned that a baffling charge from TWPSUB was his WashingtonPost.com subscription. When you dispute a charge that turns out to be legitimate, it's called friendly fraud, and too many false alarms could result in your credit card being terminated, says MasterCard's Iyer. And do call your card issuer as soon as possible if you suspect fraud. Also call if the merchant is unresponsive. You can check your credit card's website or app for details And to initiate the process, Visa, MasterCard, and American Express advertise zero liability policies that promise you won't be responsible for charges you didn't authorize. And lastly, don't lose track of paperwork. Receipts, contracts, emails, invoices, online chat transcripts, and other documentation can help you back up your claim and complete the chargeback process. Include backup documents and a letter to the card issuer. Also read merchant contracts. I've personally been burned because of language buried in a travel agency document. And as we finish up our program today, we will try to squeeze in a couple money hacks from the book Money Hacks by Lisa Rowan, 275 plus ways to decrease spending, increase savings, and make your money work for you. And money hack number 237, choose better passwords. While banks and other financial institutions have plenty of measures in place to keep your account secure, you need to do your part too. That means choosing good passwords for all of your accounts. Don't default to your pet's name or the street where you grew up. Make your passwords a pain for hackers to guess. Passwords should be complex. Don't just use lowercase letters. Mix it up with capitals, numbers, and punctuation, too. Money hacks is a bad password. M$NEY HCK5 is better. And make them long. The longer they are, the longer it takes for a hacker to figure out the right combination of numbers and letters. And also make them unique. Don't reuse the same password for a whole bunch of accounts. If you do, when a hacker figures out your password for one account, it's like they found the key to your entire financial life. As an extra precaution, set up two-factor authentication for any account that offers it. Doing so will require you to enter a second password, a short numeric code sent in an instant to your mobile phone to complete the login process. And we are out of time again today for today's episode of Money Matters. Thank you for joining us. And until next time, this is Larry Wilson. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is also available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call, 919-832-5138. The number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.